Hey guys, this is Daniel. Thanks for tuning into Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast number 2. On this episode, we've got a great guest, Bob Siegel. He has over 30 years of experience in education and a heart of gold. I'm really excited for you to get the different value bombs and leadership insights that Bob shares with us. If you haven't been to the website already, check out betterleadersbetterschools.com. I've got the 15 phrases of effective school leaders. It's all yours for free. I've also written a report. It's about 14 pages called The Blueprint for School Success, where I outline the 6 key strategies that helped take my school to number 16 in the state and dramatically improve student achievement. Take care and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer. And now for our Bauer trivia question. True or false, Daniel believed little creatures called gimmets lived inside the highway toll machines. Stay tuned. The answer will be revealed following today's amazing podcast.
Hello, this is Daniel from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I am honored and thrilled that you are listening today. Today's guest is Bob Siegel. Bob has been a dynamic educator for over 30 years as a teacher, coach, principal, and adjunct professor. He has positively impacted thousands of lives in his career through his loving leadership style. His words and actions have motivated many children and adults to success. Bob has a true sense of how to lead others and is a wonderful example to those around him. He has a true desire to lead others in a positive way, inspiring them to do good things while keeping lots of humor in his daily interactions with those that he comes in contact with. Bob has a BA from Aquinas College and a master's in leadership from Michigan State University. Go Spartans!
Yes.
He is currently the principal at Valley View Elementary School in Rockford, Michigan, and an adjunct professor at Grand Valley State University. Ladies and gents, I present to you Bob Siegel.
Thank you, Daniel. Welcome everyone who is listening. I'm honored and thrilled to be sharing my insights with you. I don't profess to know everything, but I'm looking forward to sharing my years of experience and insights with all of you. Thanks for listening.
Well, Bob, let's jump right in and start off with what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Well, Daniel, I've always loved children from the time that I was growing up. I'm the oldest of 4. So, and my little brother and sisters, I always loved them dearly and was always responsible for them when my dad went to work every night in second shift. And coupled with my love for children, children have always loved me. And I know that might sound kind of corny, but there's been a mutual love there for a long time. So it was only natural that I teach children.
That's great. So there was always this natural give and take relationship, and you just found that, you know, it was just something that you wanted to pursue. So Bob, how would you describe your leadership style?
Well, I've thought about this a lot. In fact, I wrote a book about it.
Right.
My leadership style, Danny, would be that of a coach. I was a head varsity and track coach for 10 years, and I've modeled my principal leadership after that as a coach. So you think of a coach. A coach loves his players. I love my team, my teachers and kids. A coach motivates, which I do try to do every day by modeling how to behave. Mm. I inspire those that are around me. So my model, if you will, my leadership style is that of a head coach. And then I don't want to leave out lead teacher. I taught for 20 years. I still view myself as a teacher, and now I'm teaching teachers and the students.
So I understand that idea of coaching. I coached basketball for 10 years myself. Is that something that you just fell into, or is it? Why did you gravitate towards coaching?
It's a crazy story, Daniel.
Let's hear it.
I was an avid runner. I became an athlete as an adult. I never participated in sports in high school, and I found out I had this talent to be a distance runner. So I became a runner when I was in my late 20s and 30. When I was 30 years old, I ran a 420 mile.
What?
And so, yep, true story.
That's awesome.
If it sounds like I'm bragging, it's only getting toward how I got into coaching. So there was a coaching position that opened up down the road at a high school, and I was teaching at St. Alphonsus making $11,000, and I needed to supplement my income.
Right.
So I started coaching cross country and found out I had a talent for it. I knew how to get kids to run fast, and I did. And then track was a little more interesting because all I knew was about running. So I developed this philosophy. I get great people around me, and we had great teams coaching in Forest Hills Central for 10 years. So that's how the coaching I fell into. I didn't even know what a varsity letter was, let alone how you get a varsity letter. So it was a pretty interesting experience, but it led me to where I am now, no doubt. The other thing I wanted to share real quick that pops in my head is how when I was coaching, I didn't know I didn't have a history of being on a team.
Sure.
So I coached from the heart, and it worked.
Yeah. That's great. Coaching from the heart. I remember reading in the book, you talk about a young man that kind of left you guys hanging at some point. But everybody wanted you to basically kick this kid off the team. But your heart was telling you something different. And you worked hard through that whole season developing a relationship with the young man. You gave him another opportunity. And if I remember correctly, he basically became the best runner in school history at your school. Is that true?
And he still is. He still holds records. Yes, it is. Wow. And it was a moment in time where I went with my heart. I knew the right thing to do. It wasn't the popular thing to do. To this day, we're still in communication. It was a blessing for sure.
So Bob, we've heard a few success stories and some heartwarming stories here. Let's jump to a harder question. What has been, in your opinion, your worst leadership mistake?
My worst leadership mistake was confiding in the wrong people. I love to talk. I'm a social guy.
Right.
And too social. When I started as a principal, I would basically talk too much to the wrong people. And so what I learned through that whole process was I treat everybody exactly the same on my staff. I don't confide in anyone, frankly, except maybe my secretary. What I learned is that you have to be very confidential in conversations that you have. So I learned the hard way to basically keep my mouth shut and really research before you confide in people and tell people private things. You just have to be very careful about confidentiality. That's what I learned the hard way.
And I also remember in the book, you talked about a guy that you really looked up toward and in many ways mentored you and even got you thinking for the first time about being a school leader and pursuing the principalship. But then he sort of gave you a bad review and maybe burned some bridges there. That had to take you by surprise. How do you rebound from something like that?
It was hard because I had worked really hard on this endeavor. And he wanted to have the limelight. And so what I learned from that is if I ever was a principal, ever was a leader, that I would never do that to anybody. I celebrate any success, deflect the success. And if there ever is a problem, I own the problem. I never throw anyone under the bus.
So listeners, those of you listening to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, what Bob just said there is pure gold. As a leader, you own the mistakes. You shoulder the problems. But at the same time, the leader's job is to serve. Jim Collins describes level 5 leaders. These leaders do not lack ambition or passion. But the passion, the ambition that they have, it's not for themselves and personal glory. It's for the work. And in our cases, it's for the students. It's for the community, the school. Guys, if you're a school leader, be a level 5 leader, be like Bob.
Thank you.
No problem. Let me ask you this. Knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
One of the things I would say is be very careful, you know, what you say and to whom, based on that experience I had. The other is to always keep the big thing the big thing. And the big thing is the kids. You will never, ever go wrong if every decision you make is based on what's best for the children in your school. It's not always going to be popular because there are adults that work in schools. They're called teachers and support staff. And they often don't they often might not see what you see in the bigger picture, but my advice is always, always keep the big thing, the big thing, the big picture, and that's the kids, what's best for the kids.
Have you found a way to communicate that big picture about keeping the focus on the kids in those moments where you have that incongruence between staff and your heart for the
students? I have, and the best advice I give, and I mentioned in the book, is to what you do, what you model, how I behave every single minute of every single day in my school setting. It deflects to the adults around me. It takes a while sometimes, but words speak more, way stronger than actions. I'm sorry, actions speak way stronger than words. And what you do every minute of the day is way more profound than what you can ever say.
So in addition to some of these struggles, we've talked about the mentors, sometimes the staff not understanding the vision and where the ship is going. What are some other challenging aspects of your position?
Well, in Rockford, where I work, we've had budget cuts for all 15, 16 years that I've been in Rockford. In fact, some blame it on me, but it's not me. It's the state. The economy has been erratic, obviously. So having to do more with less. But what you do learn from that experience, Daniel, and listeners, is that you realize that people are the most important resource that you have. It's not about the stuff that you have. It's about the people that you surround yourself with, your team. And so even though I'm one of these silver lining guys, people get sick of that probably, but I know that we can still meet the needs of our kids with less, and we have for almost my whole tenure in Rockford. Another challenge is the testing. We have... I really believe in my heart we test kids way too much. And if you were to ask what a teacher on my staff what's the struggle they have, it's the amount of testing that we put kids through. And I'm all about accountability, but it's sometimes it's just not right for kids what we're doing with the testing.
How many of those tests are, I guess, state or locally driven as opposed to tests that you decide to take?
Great question. We went from MEEP to MSTEP this spring. So the biggest challenge was the state test. And the other tests that we do are based upon how, in Michigan at least, our teachers evaluated based upon student performance. So a lot of those tests are driven by what we have to do to evaluate our teachers.
Gotcha. Can you speak a little more about accountability? I know that we use testing a lot of times in teacher evaluation and accountability measures, but what are other ways that you hold people accountable so that they are high performers?
Well, one way, and I know this might seem out of the box a little bit, but you know, do people want to be at your school? We had 125 new kindergartners register, and I interview every single parent. And one of the things that came out in many interviews, Daniel and listeners, is that some parents actually moved into the Valley View attendance area in Rockford due to the reputation that our school has. So you talk about accountability. I mean, if people are coming to your school because of your success and because of your the positivity that you have every day, that to me is a huge accountability.
But what I connect with you there, Bob, is that we now have a school that has that sort of magnet, that pull for our students. In Chicago, there's 11 selective enrollments, and I work at one of those selective enrollments. And this incoming freshman class is the biggest class we've ever had. So I think what you're trying to say is when you have that type of school that everyone wants to be a part of, and more people in the community are excited about what you're doing inside the walls, it makes the people that work there work a little bit harder because they know this is a place where also staff are going to want to join the team and be a part of the magic that's happening.
Correct. Very well said. We have other schools, teachers want to be in our school, and there's no better compliment than that.
So moving into the final stage of the interview, let me ask you this. What sets you apart from other leaders in education? What is your secret sauce?
I think what I do maybe better than some is I have this eternal optimism that all children can succeed. I really believe that we can make a huge difference. And I am totally engaged from the time I get to school early, I leave late, and I'm engaged with staff, students, parents from the minute the bell rings. The visibility, the engagement, you know, I truly love my job, and it shows, and it makes our school better because of how invested I am in our school. And I, again, the coaching mindset that I'm there to inspire teachers. I'm there in the good times and the bad. And we've created this family atmosphere at our school that's second to none.
And when you build such a great culture like that, and it's really dynamic to be a part of, how do you balance work, life, and family?
Well, again, my faith comes in. I try really hard to create that balance. And the word presence comes to mind. When I'm home, and my kids are older now, Daniel, they're 30 and 26. But when they were young, when I was home, I was home. I was a dad. I'm a husband when I'm with my wife nowadays. But when I'm school, I guess my thought would be wherever I am, I'm present in that moment. And I'm there for whoever. I'm here to serve wherever I'm at. That's where I'm at. And it might sound simplistic, but I think as a leader, if you can do that, you can just be present where you're at in that moment in time as a leader, you'll be successful.
John Lee Dumas is in many ways my podcasting mentor, and he has an acronym that I absolutely love called FOCUS, Follow One Course Until Success. But I see so many leaders that get unfocused, that they see so many different shiny objects. They have that shiny object syndrome, and they split their focus. They split what only they can do in an organization among many little tasks that probably are trivial in the grand scheme of things. So with that in mind, Bob, what is one thing that only you can do in your building?
There can only be one head coach, and I'm he. and so what I'm going with that is back to a comment I made earlier, if something goes well, we celebrate that, but I never, ever take credit for it. If something goes wrong, it's my fault. I'll never throw anyone under the bus. So I guess the whole idea of that, the head coaching, the inspiration, the presence, I'm engaged with every single human being in my building every single day. A day does not go by that I have engaged with every single person. There's 640 kids in my building, Daniel. I am present for every single person every single day.
I love that idea. Can you go a little deeper? What does it look like to engage with your staff, with your students? What does it look like when Bob is present?
That's a great question. Starting with when the kids get off the bus, Daniel, I'm there to greet every single kid. High fives. I wish I knew every kid's name. I've tried really hard. It's not my brain, but I do know every child. And I know that might sound weird, but I know every face. I know the kids. So it starts from the moment the kids get off the bus to going around and welcoming every staff member every day. I have 27 teachers walking in every room. How's the family? How are the kids? Being present. You had asked about accountability, back to that question. And a big part of accountability is me knowing what's going on in those classrooms. So being in the classrooms, doing walkthroughs, not formal observations, but just being present and knowing that this teacher, this adult in this room is good for these kids. And I'm proud to say in my school it is. But lunchtime, I'm always at lunch with the kids. I interact with them. We have a great support staff that helps clean up. And my job is I just interact with the kids. I'll sit down, I'll lunch with them and go on the playground, shoot baskets with the kids through the course of the day. I think I have a little ADHD. I'm not, but so I use that to my advantage, listeners, where I cannot sit at my desk for more than 5 minutes, but I use that to my advantage. So I'm always out and about. And of course, I even end every day with a joke of the day to lighten the load. And the kids actually contribute jokes. It's really cute. They say their name on the PA. They love it. So they walk out of the building with a smile, and I hug them goodbye and goodnight. So from the moment the day starts, the moment day ends, engaged, engaged, engaged with everybody.
So three things there, listeners. What a great way to show honor to Bob's students by having them submit jokes of the day. What way to also just add a little bit of humor and lightheartedness around a pretty intense place that schools can sometimes be. A second thing I want to point out would be that he is always in his classes, not formally necessarily evaluating teachers, but as a school leader, you have to have an idea of what's going on in every single classroom. Each student matters, and like Bob said, each one of them is capable of great things. It's your duty to know what's going on in each class And again, that helps with accountability since you're aware of what is happening. The third thing that Bob didn't mention, but I want to pull out, is that he has incredible relational capital that he can spend. If that idea is new to you, it's just by developing relationships with other people. Think of it like a cup. And each time you're spending time with people and that relationship's getting built, they're pouring water or depositing coins into that metaphorical piggy bank. And sometimes when you have to hold somebody accountable, if that cup is full or that piggy bank is full, you can make a accountability withdrawal. And because you spent the hard work building trust, building relationship, those accountability talks go a lot better. I think I understand your boundaries at home. You said you're a present father. I understand that faith plays a big role there. I want to go into a little more about boundaries at work, because I'm curious, one, about your ADHD. You said you can't be at your desk for more than 5 minutes. So I'm wondering, how do you avoid distractions, stay focused at work, but also, if you're not at your desk that much, I know there's a ton of paperwork behind the scenes that needs to get done. When do you get it done?
Well, this brings up something that I think is very, very critical as a leader, and that is delegation. So what you want to do as a leader, everyone, is you want to find the talents and gifts that the people around you have. And when you find those talents and gifts, it would be really silly not to use them for two reasons. Number one, if people have gifts around you, it's not right for you as a leader not to give them that opportunity to share those gifts, because it's going to grow your team. It's going to help the school be better. The other is, you can have a life if people are doing things that you think you need to do. Trust me, you cannot do everything as the principal. So when you find good people that know how to do things well, you can delegate those responsibilities. And my motto is, I will trust you until you prove to me that I can't trust you. So it frees you up to be that engaged leader, to be that visible leader, to be with the people that you need to be with, as Abraham Lincoln did. Management by walking about. You had mentioned my favorite book is called Lincoln on Leadership, and that's the book that I would recommend that everyone reads, by Donald Phillips.
So Lincoln on Leadership by Donald Phillips, and why is that such a great book everyone should read?
Because he talks about how, and in my humble opinion, I think Abraham Lincoln is maybe the best leader ever on this earth. And what he did was he made sure that he was always amongst the people. And the phrase that I'll always remember from that book is management by walking about. So if you're engaged with the people that you're leading, chance of their success is high, because you know what they're doing and they know that you're coming around. Not to check off on them, but that they know that your presence raises performance to a higher level if you're the leader. There's no doubt about it, just you being there. So management by walking about. That's what I gleaned most from that book, again, Lincoln on Leadership by Donald Phillips.
Thank you for that book recommendation. Listeners will definitely link up probably through Amazon, a way to get that book. So if you want to get Lincoln on Leadership by Donald Phillips, it will be there on the website under show notes. Bob, is there a tech resource that you leverage to help you be super effective at work?
You know, I'm 57 years old, and the reason I bring that up is my generation, I wouldn't say I'm not tech savvy, but aside from email and, you know, LinkedIn is how we got together here, Daniel, I'd say LinkedIn and just general email. I mean, those are the ways that I work best.
Well, that's great. And what I love about what you said there, Bob, school leaders, if you're not really utilizing LinkedIn yet, that is a great way to just increase your network, to get around other people that are doing the things you want to be doing in 10 years, to learn from others, to really learn from people's mistakes, from their experiences. And you need to hop on social media sites, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, great ways to connect with other school leaders for sure. So Bob, our last question. This one is quite a doozy. I'm looking forward to your answer. You are building a school from the ground up. You are not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you were given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
Well, my first priority would be to find the best, most talented, most selfless, loving teachers that I can get my hands on. And I would pay them what we pay professional athletes.
There you
because
go.
Because they are the most important, teachers are the most important people in our culture. And it's just, it's a crime how undervalued they are, both by their salaries and by our culture. So I would find the most talented teachers that I can get my hands on and have them work with me. Once I found those teachers, listeners, I would have them collaborate with me to do everything else, to pick the curriculum, to build literally, because I'm thinking you're saying building, the actual building. I would have them help me create the building, because if they have talents that, of course, I don't have, and a good leader surrounds themselves with talents that they don't have, I want them to collaborate with me because they're so talented and so gifted to create the best school imaginable. Because this isn't going to be Bob Siegel's school. This is going to be our school for the children. The other thing that is highly overlooked sometimes is support staff. I would find support staff, secretaries, custodians, everybody that helps that isn't in the classroom, I would find the most loving, child-centered support staff that I could find. And as a principal, you will find that your support staff is key in what you try to accomplish as a leader. And the third thing would be the resources that I would need. And again, I'm going to go back to that team that I've created, of that team of teachers that are unbelievably talented, gifted, loving, child-centered, and they would help us, we would choose everything that kids need to be successful, because it wouldn't be my school, it would be our school.
Listeners, did you hear that? It's our school. It's not about you, the leader. It is about the students and the parents, but it's also about the staff, the support staff, the whole community. It is our school. What I love about what Bob just said, he is so focused on others. He is definitely a leader that serves, and that's that level 5 type of leadership that Jim Collins talks about. The other thing, I don't know if you noticed it, but he was talking about paying teachers what athletes make. I would love to do that too. And again, this is if you had unlimited resources and can use all of your imagination. But the key there that Bob is talking about is that teachers might just be the greatest resource in your building. You will not accomplish the vision, you will not serve students like you should, unless the teachers and the support staff are on board. So listeners, how do you celebrate your staff? How do you honor them? If we can't pay them like athletes, what are the little things that you do every single day to show them that they truly are such a valuable resource to the building?
Hey guys, Daniel from Better Leaders, Better Schools. At the end of this interview, we had some technical difficulties and I lost Bob on Skype. Don't worry, Bob is okay. Our Skype call was the only fatality. And so I just want to thank you, Bob, for being on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, episode 2. I really appreciate your key leadership insights. My key takeaways is just, it is so important to be people-focused, other-focused, to build relationships, and to truly demonstrate that you care. When you do that, anything is possible. It's much more likely you're going to achieve whatever vision, whatever goals you have set for the school. If you guys want to go deeper into Bob's work, he has a book that I'm really enjoying, Learn to Lead with Love. You could get that off his website direct, www.learntoleadwithlove.com. That's www.learntoleadwithlove.com, and pick up Bob Siegel's book. I also want to invite you to visit the Better Leaders, Better Schools website. That's just betterleadersbetterschools.com. I have a free gift for you there called The 15 Phrases of an Effective School Leader. Now, a lot of these things might be common sense. Some of them are thinking outside the box or phrases that you've never heard of. So that gift is absolutely free. You can get it just by visiting the website and downloading it. So I hope you do that. Please comment and rate this episode. Once I get a few episodes up, I'm going to feature you, the listener, read your comments and just quickly respond to them. So I'd really appreciate a rating and comment in iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. And finally, if you'd like to connect with me, I promise to read all your emails and write a response. Can't guarantee the ETA of a response, but I will get through them all. And my email is daniel@betterleadersbetterschools.com. That's daniel@betterleadersbetterschools.com. I'm also very active on Twitter, @_betterschools.
Can't believe I almost forgot the best part of the show. Well, outside of the great leadership tips that we all learn, the Bauer trivia question. And ashamed to admit, no, proud of my heritage. The answer is true. When I was 3, 4, 5, I don't know, my mom, my aunts, my family basically loved to lie to me. And I was a curious young man. I'm still a curious old man. And I want to know, how does everybody know that you throw in the correct change when you pass through a toll? And we would drive a lot from the suburbs of Chicago to Chicago. Well, my family thought it'd be fun to lie to me, and they told me that little creatures called gimmets lived inside the toll booth. They would count the appropriate amount of change, and they would let you through. And they probably told me some horrific story, too, what happened to families that threw in incorrect change, what happened to naughty boys and naughty little girls. But we always paid the right toll fare. The gimmets counted it, and we made it to our destination safely. Hey, this is Daniel from Better Leaders, Better Schools. Thanks for listening. See you same better place in the same better time. Bye-bye.